Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. It's another week. We hope you're having a wonderful one. It's Wednesday as we're recording this, but happy Thursday to all of you.
Shout out to the Thursday crew.
Yeah. So I do have a quick update before we get into anything in the pod. I got the Grinch meal. And you know this because you got the Grinch meal, and yeah, so did Alex. We got the Grinch meal, and I am happy to report that I have the Grinch socks, and I don't know how visible this is on camera, but you can see the McDonald's thing, and the Grinch is on them. And there's a few varieties. There's like six different socks you can get.
Hey, and I'll be $5 for Paul flashing his ankles for y'all.
Yeah, that's true. You can submit it down. Or you can become a channel member.
That's true. That
we'll take payment in form
of. I feel like last week we were just telling them how it's okay to cancel your memberships if you don't got it this month.
Yeah.
And here we are. Well, you owe us a channel membership for seeing Paul's ankles.
It reminds me of those people whenever you go to like New York or even they come to the conventions that like give you like their mixtapes and stuff or like their books.
They
force it into your hands and then they demand that you pay them.
It's like,
I don't know if anybody's ever experienced that, but
I think if you've ever been to any type of event, you've had those types outside of it.
So there is not a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! News this week, but there is like one thing I saw and a couple of card game stories. So
what you got?
Okay. So I know we talked about how last week there was like Rarity Collection 5 and how Phantom Revenge got delayed. And so like there's not really much new to add to any of those things. However, we did get a bit of an update on Genesis format. So,
I missed this one.
Yeah, Genesis format's blog recently got updated, but two posts. There was one day before yesterday about, like, what was it, YCS Bologna and kind of the statistics and information that they got from Genesis there.
Ooh, numbers.
And then today's, which is what I'm mostly going to be focusing on, or well, it's like yesterday, today, whatever. What to expect in the December points update, because we are getting a points update. But I know that like people are not super happy with Droll and Lockbird comes up a lot because it's that people feel its point cost is too low and it's kind of, you know, a hand trap that's very preventative.
But I mean, there will always be a card that feels like it's pointed too low because that's kind of how metagames work. There will always be something that is considered rude to the vast majority of the playing field. And you'll want it to point increase, but then we'll just kind of turn our attention to the next thing.
And yeah.
I feel like it's kind of never ending.
It's very much a gamer's thing. Like when you're in there's a meta game, there's lots of characters or heroes or players or decks or whatever. And like you've got a lot of people who are all given a chance to voice their opinions. Even if one thing gets banned or nerfed, there's always like something next in line. So
like Droll and Lockbird is a strong card, but I feel like of the hand traps you can get hit with, I mean, Droll and Lockbird kind of requires more commitment from the opponent.
Yeah, anyway, here's what they have to say.
Okay.
So they say that adjustments fall into several categories that they're now outlining here.
Oh,
there are severe performance outliers, i.e. census data. So they take a census of like all the deck lists that enter in these like Genesis flights at YCS events or regionals. They say that it's best for them to get data from full tournaments. So it's like, okay, you just like snapshotting your Genesis deck list and sharing it on Twitter and like using the hashtag, they'll see it, but they don't weight it as heavily as like if they can see, okay, here's what all 8 or 16 people in this Genesis flight were playing.
Got it. Because that gives
them a fuller picture. So they say this includes cards both on a deck level and an individual level. For example, Draco Tail's performance as a deck since October puts it in line for increases, and Droll and Lockbird's performance as an individual card puts it in line for an increase as well. So, they say cards seeing excessive play will see their costs go up, other cards will come down, and we will try to keep OTKs boxed out. So once we exit early access, it'll be different. Now, this is the first time that they've described Genesis as being early access.
I didn't know we were in early access.
Yeah, it reminds me of mini games today. And we'll be talking a lot about the long-term Genesis plans soon, and those plans are pretty extensive.
Oh.
So like, I don't know what that means.
Long-term, you say.
So to put it another way, everything listed below is going to be a performance outlier unless we hit it now. That's what early access is about. So here's the cards that they specifically look out for. Cards that attack the deck or extra deck. So like anything like the Hecahan's cards and the Kuul-Tun cards, but also things like Runic fall into this category.
Your poor Dogmatica deck.
Yeah, that's kind of a shame because I don't feel like anyone's playing Dogmatica. But yeah, I guess they don't want to hit, or they want to hit strategies where like you're pulling cards out of like, you know, your opponent's
poor spirit
private parts. That sounded bad.
private parts.
I mean, like literally, that's what it is. Yeah, it's, you know. Cards that excessively multiply. Dododo Warrior is the poster card for this category.
I was trying to think of a card that multiplies.
So basically, like, it's these cards where it's like you summon it and just summons another body, and then the body can somehow lead to a third. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Just yeah, those sorts of cards. Cards that insulate turn one combos. So think Crossout Designator or even Trap Tricks where Felicia was being played. You can make Felicia pretty quickly, and then by using Gravedigger's Trap Hole, you can stop your opponent's hand traps. So these cards, at the moment, are too much of a bargain for how much you stand to gain. Towers monsters, so Lunalite Liger Dancer, Super Quantum Mech King, Great Magnus, etc. Monsters that are pretty much immune to other card effects, like those. Readjusting extra deck monsters that get you another card. So Gaga Gaga Girl and Wind Up Zen Mighty are cards in this category. It's these things that make you summon them, and then they just like summon in another thing. And then also they say themes that weren't tempting. So last time I reduced the points on some themes that were popular internally but not externally, and we'll do so again this time. That's Dragon Maid, Sword Soul, Tenyi, Snake Eye, Ninjas again. And they say maybe Centurion and Six Samurai, although those two are trickier. So
yeah, look, if they free up my ninjas some more, I will jump in head first. I mean, they already reduced them once.
Yeah.
So let's do it again.
And reweighting some point distributions. They gave the example of Rite of Aramisir and Water Enchantress are at 5 each, while Wandering Griffin Rider is at 20, so they might be kind of like moving that around. They said the Gladiator Beast and Crystrons are being looked at for this. And then a more high-profile case is Branded, where the Fallen and the Virtuous came out, and we figured everybody would want to play it at 3. That's to say the quick play spell. So they balanced that by putting points on the extra deck monsters, but from what they've heard, most Branded players would have been perfectly happy with just one or two copies of their new spell and would have preferred the extra deck cost to stay where they were. So we're going to make that correction. And then generic housekeeping. There are several handy generic cards that almost no one is using at their current values that will drop. We're still figuring out how gradual to make these declines. And then the next update after this one is going to happen around the release of Burst Protocol. So there are no official large-scale Genesis events between now and then, so the primary purpose of that update will be to add points to the cards that are releasing in Burst Protocol and adjust other costs based on the addition of Burst Protocol.
Okay.
So that's a lot about Genesis format. Hear anything that sticks out to you?
First off, I'm going to give a shout-out to Konami. This kind of transparency is unheard of in this game, and regardless of the things I have said, have been saying and will say about you guys and your company. This is good work. Good work.
I got you. Despite the many, many bad things I've said about you and will continue to say and still feel.
No, but that was such a good write-up and a very transparent look at how they evaluate cards and strategies. It kind of helps make the whole process feel more predictable. And I think that's been one of our sticking points with like ban lists from the past, is sometimes things can feel like it comes out of nowhere. And it's like, well, what was their decision making? How did they come to this conclusion? At least in Genesis format, we get the full rundown of picture. How they evaluate things. Like, this was a very logical and sound article. You don't have to agree with all their points, but they did at least lay them out.
I know something that people have talked about with Genesis right now, and I'm not sure if this is still the sentiment, but it's just kind of the idea that like Genesis doesn't quite know what it wants to be yet, some people feel. Like, you know, is it supposed to be? Because right now, a lot of people are calling it advanced format light, right? Like, it's diet modern, mm-hmm. where the best decks tend to just be the newest things, Draco Tail, Radiant Typhoon, you know. And also just that, like, there isn't really all that much space for, like, the old strats to really work. So even though they maybe build this as, like, a return for the lapsed Yu-Gi-Oh! Player, that doesn't actually seem to be exactly how it's playing out, because it's like, well, can you actually play, like, your 2008 gadget deck in Genesis and do well? Not really. And that seems to be sort of a consequence of how, like, modern cards still have, you know, a lot of words on them, and they're more...
two and three effects on all of them.
They're more finely tuned than anything from before, like 20, whatever. So, yeah.
But I mean, to some degree, Genesis format still has to support the overall goal of getting players to buy more products. So yeah. The format has to incorporate new things, and new things have to be made to be enticing over old things. So I don't know if we can ever get away from that, because the moment Genesis format feels like it doesn't make people want to buy new cards.
Yeah, Konami Japan probably won't like
yeah, to hear that. Yeah, that's when this whole thing gets stomped out.
That's actually another thing, too, is like, you know, these questions around how much should you be hitting new stuff? Because basically when the stuff came out in Doom of Dimensions, Konami said in their blog post, well, we're not going to hit any of this stuff when it releases. We're going to let it see how it goes in the format. The only mm-hmm. things that they hit from Doom of Dimensions were cards like Draco Tail Fraxel?
I got Fraxel.
Or whatever. Because like it was already... And like K9 Naroi, because they're already part of themes that were established as quite strong. Mm-hmm. But in general, like Radiant Typhoon got off the hook with no hits. And so some people feel like, well, if that's how it's going to always be, then Genesis is just always going to be play the archetype that came from the most recent product, because it won't be hit, and it will be the most recent on the power curve anyway. And so the question is, like, should they be maybe pre-hitting some of these things? And yeah.
So this is my argument against that idea. Naroi and Fraxel both got preemptive hits because they're a part of established strong strategies. Mm-hmm. Radiant Typhoons, how strong would you say that deck is?
Ooh, I would need like a rubric of some kind.
In the advanced format.
Oh, not very? Like it's
so, okay.
Very rogue? Like
in... Yeah. 2 years ago, if an archetype like Radiant Typhoons came out in a set where it's a new archetype, but it's not going to make a splash at all in the metagame, we would agree that there's not a whole lot of value in picking up and building it.
Oh, I get where you're getting at.
It doesn't
at.
Have a space to compete. Mm-hmm. Well, Genesis format gives Radiant Typhoons a space to compete. I don't think it's fair to say that this is... advanced format, like, oh, the newest deck is always going to win. That's card games. The newest deck always wins. But at least in this case, you can play K9, you can play Draco Tails, but Radiant Typhoons isn't just playable, it's good here.
Yeah, so it's a very double-edged sword. I mean, like, I'm, as somebody who likes for decks to get a chance to shine, it is good that a deck that basically can come out and not really be expected to do well at the YCS advanced format level, but can be expected to do well in Genesis. I don't really have like too much of a problem with it. But then on the other hand, it's like, well, then some would say, well, why? So what is the point of Genesis then? Like, is it just to give? Because then you're still just like, okay, the last 2-3 sets worth of product, the only thing that you care about here, and were they sort of lying to people when they said you can like play this casual format with like your older lapsed cards and your older lapsed players, and they play it thinking that that's how mm-hmm. it's going to work, and I can use my 2014 deck. But in reality, you're still going to be facing a deck like Radiant Typhoon, which while not top tier in the meta, is still new and still very overbearing, and it's like, you know, the 2008 gadgets aren't competitive with it, and people thought maybe they would be.
Tried to go after my nostalgic love of gadgets. I see what you did there.
Yeah, it was targeted to you.
But I don't think it's a lie at all. Like, Konami didn't give us a hard format in the way that we have the advanced format. They gave us one that we are allowed to customize ourselves. Now, if you're going to go to a YCS Genesis event, then you should expect to play in the most competitive version of Genesis that you can find. Mm-hmm. But Genesis is a gift for communities. We actually have to do something with it. The format doesn't just become your dream format. You change your point threshold. You do things to make Genesis the format for your older decks. If you're sitting across from Radiant Typhoon with your 2008 deck, you made a mistake.
You know, you are right. I do think that maybe people aren't looking enough at like the customizability of Genesis, because the crowd, like when I look at the crowd that's complaining about even say Droll and Lockbird, right? You know, like this card's too strong, like they need to add to its point values. I have mixed feelings on Droll and Lockbird, but I actually do think that maybe you're right. Like, what if you really want Genesis to be to lower the power level, then I guess you got to play like 0 point Genesis, right? Yeah, like that was an option that Konami.
I guess Radiant Typhoons were 0 points, weren't they?
Well, you know, actually, it's true. Oh, maybe this is a little. Yeah, maybe this isn't such an easy.
You know, maybe they should put some points on new archetypes.
I mean, it sounds like they're going to be. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm very. It seems like right now there's just a bit of an identity crisis. Like
and I identified that early on, where I was like, I couldn't tell if they want us to play hand traps or not in Genesis format. Yeah. Because on one hand, they keep adding points to hand traps because they're too good and they're too strong. On the other hand, they said that they want to increase the points on cards that would insulate you from those hand traps. And it's like, so am I protecting myself from them or am I... I don't know what you want from me.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this is early access, as they're calling it, which, you know, it's technically news to all of us. Like that this is the first time they've used that phrase. So I guess they're figuring out what they want Genesis to be. Like maybe it is meant to be meta light. Maybe it is meant to be like casual funhouse. I don't really know.
Cause I just don't want there to be more decks caught in the middle. Like my Plunder Patrols, which can't be played in either format. You know, we don't need to add to the like middle section of Yu-Gi-Oh that is a no man's land.
Yeah, or we need to address it, but not add to it. I get what you're saying. So, the world's rarest Yu-Gi-Oh card just dropped, but it's not for sale, Alec.
They never are.
So, Konami actually just made a giant custom version of the spell card Ritual Sanctuary, and it was given to Japanese Yu-Gi-Oh video producer Hajime Siacho.
Siacho?
Yeah, in celebration of his upcoming wedding. So he uploaded the unboxing of it to his YouTube channel where he revealed that the card was sent by Konami and it was absolutely massive. So they sent him a custom giant card. Now, the thing is, he is actually, he voices a character in Yu-Gi-Oh! Go Rush, is what I was told.
I think it was Yu-Gi-Oh! 7s. He's President Yu-Gi-Oh! 7s. Goha.
Yeah, President Goha. Yeah, so you can see in this video here, he does open it and it's very large.
Did they send it to him in this frame?
I'm watching him unbox it now. I would not be surprised if they sent it to him in a frame for him.
That's crazy.
It is the art of Ritual Sanctuary, but it's kind of like modified a little bit. So it's a alternate art, oversized version of Ritual Sanctuary with that card's art of an anonymous bride, replaced by Siacho and his bride, who's covering her face with a bouquet of flowers. And chibi versions of Yu-Gi-Oh's Ray and Rose can be seen off to the side.
Oh my god, it is Ray and Rose. Why?
Okay, he framed the card.
I was about to say, that frame is huge.
Yeah, now this isn't the first time Konami's printed a one-of-a-kind Yu-Gi-Oh card. They do it usually for like tournament prize winners, but I think they also gave one...
Or Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Well, they also gave one, I think, to... Who is the soccer guy?
The one who got
no, not him. The recent, like the e-football guy.
What's
his name?
Was it Ronaldo? I forget who we had. I forget who it was.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
I'm sorry, guys. I don't follow soccer.
Yeah, it was. I think he also got a custom card.
The World Cup is going to be in the Americas.
And nice. I kind of got to redeem himself with a little bit of. I know something.
I know one thing.
Yeah. And of course, they've done like Tyler the Great Warrior and stuff. So, what do you think? I mean, cool.
I'm glad you explained it because I was trying to figure out why that guy married like flowers. I was like, is this plant support? Is this like new plant support, like ritual plants? Like, what's going on here?
I mean, I think it's just like an anonymity thing. You know, in Japan, anonymity I know is even more important.
Though, anonymity. Yeah, they do know these are like, this is like a cartoon looking character. I don't like.
But even that. You know,
like this doesn't look like anything. whose identity are they protecting?
So yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. And that's actually all the Yu-Gi-Oh news for the week. Not a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh. I mean, it is like it's December. It's kind of the holidays. So news for like IPs is probably slowing down a lot.
True.
But we do have other card game news, I believe. So.
Oh, most definitely. So I'll get us started with some Magic the Gathering news.
Yay! What's going on?
So, of course, it's related to universes beyond. I mean, you knew it would be a magic news story, right? So they showed off their the kind of our first look at some Marvel superheroes support in the Magic the Gathering Marvel superheroes secret layer universes beyond set.
Can I just say, I really do like how Wizards of the Coast makes these press release updates on their site that are so like just well done. Like they're very easy to read. They show everything. They talk about things. Like anyway, sorry.
Like. It says, a universe of heroes and villains. Super soldiers, we've got them. Super speedy mutants, Quicksilver is so fast that he starts the game in play. Gamma-infused scientists, the Hulk is bursting into magic, complete with a new creature type. If there's a Marvel character you love, there's a good chance you can find them in this set. And just from the early cards that we've seen, I mean, we're stretching pretty far. There's the new Captain America Super Soldier. There's the Sentry Golden Guardian. Bruce Banner, which is, of course, a reversible card that features the Incredible Hulk on the backside.
Oh, you can touch it and it flips over. That's cool.
Oh, and the new creature type, I guess, is... Oh, he's a legendary creature, Gamma Berserker Hero. Mm. Yeah, I don't think we've ever heard of a Gamma Berserker before.
Okay.
There's also Quicksilver, the Brash Blur, a mutant hero. It says, but it's not all superheroes. Many of Marvel's most famous evildoers are making their magic debut, including the King of Latveria himself, Dr. Doom. All hail Doom.
You're really getting into this.
I mean, I'm a big fan of Marvel villains, especially Dr. Doom. Not as much Baron Helmet Zemo because that guy's a Nazi, but Doom's different.
Why do you like the villain so much?
Like, oh man, like Marvel villains are so comically like stupid when it counts. So Marvel villains are amazing. They usually hatch these incredibly well thought out and seemingly unbreakable plans, and then Marvel heroes will go to other dimensions just to find a way around them. But it usually just comes down to, like, at the very end, the Baron Zemo, the Dr. Doom, they get so full of themselves, they essentially beat themselves at the end of their stories. And so I kind of just love
how... finds it relatable.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
But I do love that they kind of foil themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Baron Helmet Zemo, who actually is, I believe, villain support. I mean, he is a villain, but I think he actually can work with villains. And then there's Dr. Doom, legendary creature, human scientist, villain. And then Super Skrull.
I remember the Skrulls from Secret Invasion.
Yes, you remember Super Skrull. It was that girl that we tried to forget.
That was the Super Skrull.
At least in the MCU. And we just try not to think about that. That was a mess.
I see that they've got the Fantastic Four.
Yes, it says, we're releasing multiple Commander decks as part of this set. Oh, this kills my theory about them phasing out Commander decks.
Yeah, well, they could not do Commander decks for Marvel.
But they just hadn't done them in a while, so that was my theory. But I guess I was wrong. So it says, we're releasing multiple Commander decks as part of this set, so you can jump straight into Magic's most popular format with some of Marvel's most famous characters. Today we want to show off the Face Commander for one of these decks, or rather, Face Commanders, as any member of Marvel's first family can helm the Fantastic Four Commander deck. So, of course, this deck features Invisible Woman, Mr. Fantastic, Human Torch, and The Thing. They are each different colors, but they feature all of their colors in their card text. And I don't know if you know this, Paul, but the rules in Commander is that if any color pip is on that card, that is the colors your deck is locked
into.
Allowed
to run.
So this Invisible Woman is a white card, but she has red, green, white, and blue pips on her text, which means
so that you can run anything.
Yes. So you can run all four of them.
Okay. Yeah, these look really cool. I mean, I'm reminded, you know, I saw like the Fantastic Four movie. That's my only real exposure to it. These are really cool artworks. I like them.
Yeah, I was very excited when I started seeing them. I did end up building a Commander deck from the Spider-Man set. I wanted to build something extremely cheap that people would just give me the cards for. So I ended up building a villain deck. And the deck is very, very like unsynergistic and not all very good. But I was like, yeah, well, when the Marvel set comes out, they'll give me a lot more villains to play with. And they're already coming through.
I also see that they're doing these like comic kind of like source material type cards.
You know those are going to be in collector boosters.
Namor the Submariner, Extinction Event, World War Hulk.
They could have put more clothes on Submariner.
I mean, I guess is this just like what the cover of the comic book was?
He didn't wear a lot of clothes. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really cool though. Like as I just scroll and see, like I was scrolling down a little bit more, I see the Captain America Super Soldier classic comic. And I see a Doctor Doom classic comic. So it seems to me like basically these comic book cover cards are likely going to be, I'm guessing, in like the collector's boosters and probably worth a gajillion dollars.
So usually, how it usually works is they'll have like non-foil versions in the main set as low pull rate alt arts. And then their foil counterparts are going to be all in the collector's boosters.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to have to drop a bag.
So this is one of the sets you will be buying.
Oh, most definitely.
Some copies.
Most definitely. Oh, they even showed off some of the kind of alternate art reprints. Like you see Widow making Infiltrator, which is it's Black Widow, but the card is Dothy Voidwalker. And Massacre Girl, one of my favorite cards, is Elektra, Deadly Assassin.
Can't help but notice I see these cards have a lot of text.
I mean, modern commanders, they have to have a lot of text. Mm-hmm. Power creep is a thing. Yeah. They have to make it tantalizing to new people. They got to do a lot of things.
I mean, because like we said about Final Fantasy and stuff, there's going to be the player who basically, they buy this Marvel set and that will be the only commander deck they ever play.
Yes.
Like they'll just play it forever. So it needs to age well and feel powerful and fulfilling. But I do like what they're doing with the art, and I do like the comic book covers. I think that was kind of a slam dunk. Like it's kind of obvious, right? Like use a comic book cover as a card art. But I think that they still really look good. Yeah, I can see these being like graded and aging really well, like for that collector type of person.
Are you giving financial advice? Because cards are financial.
Yeah, they are investments. That's so true.
If you're going to give them financial advice, Paul, I think you need a license.
Yeah, I'll put a disclosure in the no.
You wouldn't be able to make videos in China.
I think this is cool. It looks like if I was a bit more of like, if I knew more of the source material for this stuff, I think I'd probably be even more excited.
Well, that's perfect, Paul, because we're going to get you a subscription to Marvel Unlimited where they have basically all their retro comics on that app and you can just start reading from there.
Right, of course. This is cool. This reminds me a little bit too about how I saw that like Doomsday's trailer is releasing here in the next like week or something. Unrelated to Marvel, but also I think the Supergirl trailer is supposed to be releasing. Like,
how dare you mention DC Comics when we're talking about Marvel? Get out.
I mean, you know, superheroes just kind of on the rise. We'll probably be able to like react to that next week, I guess, once we've had the chance to see it. But this is a good one, especially after they, you know, last week we were talking about the retraction of Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah, the secret lair.
So, good to see that this is arriving on schedule and looking good, but they can't let the Marvel one be bad, right? Like, it's got to be good.
I mean, they could, but they won't.
So, you know, it begs the age-old question. It's a universe is beyond, but it happens to be, conveniently, one of the ones that you really like.
Yes.
So, where do you, you know, has your general thoughts on, like, universe is beyond improved now that you've, like, seen this? Is this...
No, there's absolutely no reason to feel any different about Universes Beyond just because they made one that I like. It doesn't change the fact that another set is coming out that will completely ignore the lore and stories that they've been building up in Magic the Gathering for years. It doesn't change the fact that if you are actually just straight up not a Marvel fan, but you play Magic the Gathering, you are still forced to have to interact with these cards because, well, they've replaced a full set release, so.
Yeah, and I mean, I suspect that much like Final Fantasy was this year, this will probably be the best-selling Magic set of 2026, right? Because this comes out in 2026, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
2026.
Like January or something.
Now, will it be the best-selling Universes Beyond product? I wonder.
What do you think? I feel like it would be, right?
Or do you think it's hard to say? Final Fantasy went crazy.
Yeah, Final Fantasy broke the records. You know, you're right. Maybe it will be less. There's a weird reason why I think it might be less popular, though still very popular. It's actually just because, like, there's so much Marvel media that, like, I sometimes feel like if you're like a Marvel person, you're like inundated with so many buying options of so many across so many things. Cause, like, you know, for some people, there's like someone who spends, you know, $100 a month on Marvel Rivals and is still gonna dump a bajillion dollars into this.
How can you spend $100 a month on Marvel Rivals?
I don't know. Is there, like,
I guess if you buy every skin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's someone who does that, who like spends that much money on that, and they're gonna turn around and buy this. But I think that for most people, Marvel has intruded on so many, intruded's a mean word, but like Marvel has its fingers in so many different pies that, like, if you like mobile games, there's a Marvel mobile game. If you like, you know, shooters, there's a Marvel shooter. Marvel, if you like games. All these video games, yeah, I know that there's a few, and then it's like card games. And so I do wonder if maybe there's not as many places to spend a Final Fantasy fan's money, so they all flocked to Magic, whereas, like, I don't have any data to back that up. That's just, like, you know.
I mean, it's a, Marvel's a very wide-reaching property, but that also might be reason why it will beat Final Fantasy, because, well, Final Fantasy compared to Marvel is niche.
It's pretty niche.
Like, it's a niche property. I think Final Fantasy meshes better with the aesthetic of Magic Gathering than Marvel does. But I mean, Marvel is massive, and Final Fantasy is as much as we love it, you know, we still have to explain what it is to people.
All right. Well, for our final card game story for the week, we got to talk about a new card game. You know, we've gone a few months without
hearing. You know how I feel about new cards.
Hearing games. An announcement. Well, this one might be different for you because you're a big fan of Cyberpunk 2077. Well, it's getting a trading card game. Cyberpunk trading card game brings 2077 and Edgerunners to tables with a Kickstarter next year. If you don't mind reading this for me because I'm kind of sick and indisposed, please, by all means.
CD Projekt Red and card game maker Weird Co., never heard of that before, have revealed Cyberpunk TCG, a physical-only trading card game featuring characters, locations, gear, and more from the world of Cyberpunk 2077 and Cyberpunk Edgerunners. A Kickstarter for the TCG will go live next year, and if you sign up now, you will eventually receive a free Lucina Cucinata, which is that's Lucy from Edgerunners. And you'll get it one day, as the article writes.
I thought I was saying like day one. No, it's one day.
Okay. At some point, you'll get one. In Cyberpunk trading card game, you'll put together the ultimate Edgerunner crew with characters from across the franchise, pitting them against your opponents as you fight to become a Night City legend. The Cyberpunk TCG reveal trailer description reads, featuring stunning custom artwork, Cyberpunk TCG is designed for trading card game players, avid collectors, and fans of the Cyberpunk franchise alike.
Okay, I saw there was a hype trailer. We watched this.
There is a trailer. It shows off a lot of game footage, and then they put a card next to it to remind you that there's a card that comes with this game, or not really. It's separate from the game. In fact, it is years separated from the game, but the hype video is mostly the game with some card artworks.
Okay, so I want to break this down into what's good and what's bad that we're seeing here, or like what questions we have, because I know that we do have questions.
Oh, most definitely.
Okay, let's get the good out of the way first. What do you like about what you saw, if anything?
So it did, like, it used a lot of original artwork. A big part of card gaming to me is being a fan of the artworks that I see. I don't like it when card games show up and then they reuse artwork from the anime, the manga, like promotional images, like things we've seen before.
I was happy to see a Google Images card game. Like,
it was new artwork of characters I was already familiar with, so that was nice.
I agree. I thought the art looked really good. It reminded me a lot of, like, kind of how, like, a lot of Marvel Universes Beyond art looks. Like, it's very detailed, very just well done and professional. Anything else good? No, I understand it. That's it. I mean,
okay. It does incorporate the two most popular parts of the Cyberpunk franchise, both Edgerunners and 2077.
Yeah, good to see them both.
I have a caveat with that.
Go.
And the caveat is that, well, that's kind of it, because otherwise it's just a Cyberpunk tabletop series, which has run for a lot longer than those two properties.
Oh, there's a tabletop series?
That's where it comes from.
Oh,
before we had 2077, before we had Edgerunners, Cyberpunk was tabletop.
Oh, see, I was not aware.
No one did, or not no one. Many people didn't know
very
about
that. Very
obscure
knowledge.
Though I find it very interesting that this trading card game seems acutely focused on Edgerunners in the video game. That might not actually be the case. They might have just made the promo video based off these two because that's what most people are familiar with.
Okay, so...
I worry then because, like, well... I've played all of the video game and I watch Edgerunners. There's only so many characters and gadgets revealed.
So you think they're going to have to dive in and kind of make some TCG original concepts characters?
Like, I feel like they're going to have to dive into the tabletop stuff.
Yeah, but okay, well, so now that we got the good out of the way, this is another TCG in a space filled with TCGs. And I've become, if it's even possible, more cynical about new TCGs these days, particularly because I see this Kickstarter thing, and it confuses me. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't this say that, like, it's CD Projekt Red, helped with revealing this?
Yes, they definitely mentioned CD Projekt Red. So they're,
like, endorsing it, but they're not funding it? Like, why do the fans have to, like, donate and, like, help it reach the Kickstarter goal? Like, it's CD Projekt Red. Like, I know that they're not the biggest game company in the world, but, like, I mean, don't allow this if you're not even going to, like, publish it yourself. Like, if it's fan-published?
I'm very confused on this because, you know, Kickstarter's for, like, very, like, indie projects. Cyberpunk is now a proven franchise in the, like, global zeitgeist. If you want to make Cyberpunk anything, you don't need to kickstart it. So that makes me think that this is not an actual, like, fully supported CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk project, and more so an indie company got the license to make a Cyberpunk TCG.
Indie passion project with Cyberpunk IP on it.
And so top. And now they're gonna do a kickstarted TCG with it. And that's fine for an indie company. It's just, well, not, you're making it sound like this is a fully supported, like, all the bells and whistles TCG, but if you've been around the block, you know what Kickstarter TCGs are like.
Yeah, because, like, for every good one, because to be clear, there are some really good ones. I know that game Sorcery, I hear good things.
Yeah, I think Grand Archive
was a Kickstarter one. Game. I think Flesh and Blood maybe was.
Might have been,
but
I don't remember.
Either way, when I see, and those are the exceptions to the rule, let's be clear. Those are really good games. People like those. They've gone well. But for every, like, success story, there's, like, probably a dozen or more failures. And this is strange because, like, it's an IP that, like you said, like, people already kind of know about the IP, and I feel like they're just shirking all of the risk of its failure or whatever onto people.
Onto this, like, indie company. Where it kind of reminds me of, I think Dark Souls did a board game that was kickstarted, and I felt that was weird. I'm like, why does Dark Souls have a kickstarted board game?
Yeah, it's kind of strange because it's like, okay, you're a Cyberpunk fan and you like it, so... Well, first of all, would you donate to this Kickstarter when it drops next year? And if so, like, how much? What's your...
Before I answer, guys, you're going to hold me to what I say? Well, because you know, I say things and I'd say other things and I forget
what I say. Yeah, we know, Alec. It's on here in lies.
But, like, so my knee jerk is, of course not. There's no way in hell I would support this. But that's before I've given the company a chance to reach out to me.
Wow. No, but so... But so to answer the question, you're maybe probably not really planning on...
No, and I'm a huge Cyberpunk fan, but...
No, I don't blame you. No judgment.
I don't care for new TCGs in the current space that we're in. I don't care for
this. I just think that it's
half foot in, half out.
That's my main problem. Because I liked the art. I thought it looked cool. I liked the trailer looked cool. Although the trailer is very, very, very heavily supplemented by gameplay. Because, like, yeah, they're showing card images, but I think they show some Cyberpunk gameplay to kind of get your blood flowing. Because the gameplay always looks good, but it's like, well, the card game's not going to play like that. Because, like, something that we didn't see in that trailer is, like, I didn't see, like, a game board or, like, cards on a table.
We didn't really see physical cards.
I saw renders of cards, which were great looking. But it's just, like, if this Kickstarter fails to reach its funding goals and they don't make the game, then these companies are kind of, like, fine for it. Like, CD Projekt Red, at least, they don't seem like they're really... taking on any risk, like,
and I don't care for that. And you know what else I don't care for? The fact that this is a Cyberpunk 2077 trading card game, and the inherent, like, logical, like, nonsense that includes Cyberpunk.
Oh, you think it should have been digital?
Of course.
I think it digital would have been less risky for
them. I can't stand when we, like, we're so quick to just try to make something that's profitable that we don't actually take our source material into account here. Like, what sense does it make to have a paper TCG for a cyberpunk?
That's true.
Like, game. Like, I have similar issues with the fact that Digimon is a physical TCG, but I let it slide because it historically has been a physical TCG. But we're making a brand new cyberpunk TCG, and it's going to be on paper.
If you'll allow my cynicism, I'll put my little conspiracy hat on. It could just be a pump and dump. Like, a lot of games, I feel like, kind of are taking, like, not maliciously so, but I feel like a lot of games, well, maybe.
Well, Paul, be careful. You got to leave some space so the company can talk to us.
That's true. Reach out to us, Weirdco. I do think that there are games that sort of come out in, to borrow a Konami term, early access, right? Like, these games that they just, you make a quick Kickstarter, let people fund it. That way, it's your fault, Alec, that the game didn't get to release. It's not ours, it's yours. And also, like, you know, you print the first set or two, and those go pretty well, but it's really more about, like, pulling some rare cards. Like, you cash in on the whole, ooh, new card game, ooh, alt art Lucy, ooh, like, you know, we're going to make 100 signed gold art Lucys or whatever. And if you pull her, you know, she's going for, like, 600 on TCG Player. There's, like, whatever, $1,200 one. And then, like, after two sets, the game just crashes and burns, but they made off into the night with your money and sales.
Hell, anecdotally, when the Gundam TCG came out, we had a huge series of release events for Gundam. Lots of people were interested. They were desperately trying to get their hands on cards. And now my Gundam Locals is about four people, and everybody else sold out of the game months ago. And remember, the game has not been around
not for even very 6 months long, yet.
And they've already sold out.
I mean, another anecdote is, like, Riftbound. I think I might have mentioned this a couple weeks ago, but I didn't know, like, Riftbound, like, they had to do a huge patch notes thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, they had to, like, clarify a bunch of rules and mechanics and, like, and errata a bunch of cards. And it's just kind of like, so y'all just rush this shit out the market, right? Because, I mean, we covered the whole thing about, like, yeah, the print quality was bad, and, like, there were packs that weren't giving you, you know, proper rares and stuff. And so it's kind of like, as they even mentioned, they kind of were aware of these problems, but they just figured it'd be too much trouble to, like, go in and fix it. Whatever, we need to get this game out now so you can be excited. And it's just, it's very, like, you know, fix it in post type of thing. But I don't like when companies do that, because to me that shows that you are just willing to let the consumer be the guinea pig and bail if necessary.
It just tells me they were there in it to make money more so than anything else. There was a point when card games were made as, like, passion projects, and they would release wonky, but they were released wonky because these were teams working with limited resources, and nobody had really made trading card games before, so they didn't have much to base it off of. But we have decades of trading card game knowledge, follow through, and marketing to go off of, and we're still releasing games in bad shape. It feels like there's a lot of bad actors in the TCG space right now. I'm not going to call any names, but I'm pretty sure you guys can fill in.
I mean, it's funny because it's like there's not even, like, one specific name. Like, there's just a few you can. Like I said, man, I was at GameStop the other week and I saw a fucking crypto card game on the shelf. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, get you a Bitcoin somehow by playing.
So, yeah. The concept is cool. I just don't, you know. I don't know if I would back this Kickstarter thing. Anyway, that's Cyberpunk. I think that's all the card game news that we have as well. So,
okay. What is next?
I have a quick update, just speaking of GameStop. It's not, like, really a story, but Bobcat, Goose, Creepy Dolls. Inside GameStop's Trade Anything Day. So you remember that they were doing the Trade Anything Day on December 6th. You could go in and bring whatever the hell you want, and they will give you some money for it. Customers could trade in almost anything, and apparently they said GameStop got Air Jordans, they got a taxidermied bobcat, a creepy doll collection.
Oh, y'all are sick.
Somebody gave them a tiny Jesus.
What is a tiny Jesus?
I guess, like, a little miniature figure. Jesus? A speed limit sign.
Okay, that's theft. that is government property.
A happy heater. This is probably some kid's heater for like a kid's room.
Oh, I thought that was slang for a gun. I was like, dang.
I think they said guns are one of the things you can't trade in.
Gun buyback programs have changed.
Yeah, I mean, you can always go to the parking lot of NRA conference for that. Dog portrait?
Like a portrait of a dog?
It's a picture of a dog, I guess. Like a picture of your dog.
That's
like
worth something photo. To somebody.
A can of whoop ass? How does that work? Is there?
I don't start swinging on employees. It's like, how much is this worth? As he punches out an employee,
a Wii Netflix disc.
What is a Wii Netflix disc?
So on the Nintendo Wii, which came out in 2006, you could install Netflix on it, but you had to do it with a disc. You had to buy the separate disc, and that would install Netflix on your Nintendo Wii.
I did not know that.
And non-alcoholic cider for the employees.
What a wacky time.
Many who showed up for the event also donated canned food that will be sent to local food banks and pet shelters. Now, what I was kind of curious about, I think this article goes into it, what did customers receive for their trade-ins?
Credit.
You know, okay, actually take a guess. Have you already seen the answer? Stop scrolling.
No.
Okay, all right, stop scrolling.
I was looking at pictures of what things
people. Okay. How much do you think that people got? Because the answer might surprise you.
So am I saying
like the taxidermied bobcat? What do you think this person got?
Okay, I mean, I don't know what the condition of the taxidermy bobcat was. I saw a picture of it. It looked like it was in okay condition. I would say that's got to be worth what, like $50 store credit.
So, as we sort of had guessed at, anybody who brought in something to trade received a $5 trade card. So anything that GameStop doesn't normally take. $5.
Somebody trade a whole taxidermy bobcat for $5?
Yeah, anybody who brought in something to trade received a $5 trade card that can be used the day of the event or in the future, according to GameStop's website. So you got a $5 voucher. And I had a feeling they were going to do this where it's like, okay, they have so much freaking junk that people can trade in. Like, there's just no way for anybody to, like, evaluate.
They saw this picture of Snoop Dogg and said, $5?
Yeah.
This is art.
Wow, that is a picture of Snoop Dogg as a dog in a canvas. Yeah, so I had a feeling they were going to just do like a flat rate style thing where it's if you brought something, you get $5. So I guess it rewards you for bringing in a lot of things, although I'm sure there was also probably a limit to how much you could trade in.
That to me, that's upsetting because there's a lot here that's worth way more than $5.
Yeah, here's someone's speed limit sign. And the sparkling
cider. You know, I allegedly own a sign that was put up on a street somewhere that I shouldn't have taken.
Oh, you took a street sign?
I didn't say.
Oh, I see the Snoop Dogg. Wow, okay. So I thought that was just a cool update. You know, we were wondering how this would go, and so now we have some insight.
It's on my bedroom door. It says one way.
What does that mean for you?
It means there's only one way out in a body bag.
Right. Cool. Okay.
This taxidermy bobcat is crazy. Somebody really said, here's $5 for that.
I do wonder what they did with all the stuff. Like, I know that they said they donated the cans and everything, but did they just, like, throw the rest away, recycle some of it? Like,
somebody had to have taken that bobcat home.
I guess. I don't know.
Sorry, I was still looking at pictures.
I bet there was crazy stuff, man. I feel like there's also probably videos, too, like of people like, I brought my whole warehouse into GameStop.
I talk a lot of shit about GameStop, but at least that was fun. It was fun.
In the meantime, they're like scalping Pokemon products, but.
Well, you know, they take the good with the bad. Netflix says it's not destroying Hollywood. We're saving it. So Netflix's co-CEO, Ted Sarandos, doesn't believe that the streaming giant is a negative force in the film industry. Instead, the soon-to-be owner of Warner Bros. Believes Netflix is more of a savior. Netflix announced its $82 billion bid to gobble up Warner Brothers, the legendary film and media company, earlier today. That was 2 days ago.
Yeah.
If it clears regulatory hurdles, the deal will position the supreme ruler of supreming services as a god emperor of a massive TV and film catalog, as well as the properties belonging to Warner Brothers games, which include the Lego games, as well as DC adaptations like the Arkham series of Batman games and the Mortal Kombat games.
I remember, you know, I saw that Netflix is trying to buy Warner Brothers. I know that, you know, it's still yet to be approved, but Right off the bat, I don't like the idea of Netflix owning Warner Brothers. I think
there's a lot of reasons not to like it.
And that's without even like just the baseline, you know, anti-competitive, big company buys other big company, whatever. It's also just like Netflix literally does not want you going to movie theaters. Like, here's a little anecdote. One of my favorite film series is the Knives Out films. Mm-hmm. And the first Knives Out movie released in theaters, and I really liked it. I took my mom to go see it. My sister, you know, showed it to me the first time. It was really cool. And then the sequel, Glass Onion, Netflix bought the film rights to Knives Out, and then the sequel, Glass Onion, they only released it in theaters for like a day at very isolated places, and it was just straight to Netflix on streaming. And the same is happening this year with Wake Up Dead Man, which is like the third movie in that series, and it's just you have to watch it on Netflix. And that's like fine, but I'm a movie theater, like I like the experience of seeing things in a theater, and I think like having to force people to just have a Netflix subscription isn't very chill.
I remember I looked into this, I think it was yesterday I looked into it. I was wondering how many movies a year does Warner Brothers put out? And they put out like around like 13 movies a year. And given how large the budgets are and the amount of people that need to move to make movies, putting out 13 movies a year is a crazy number of movies. That makes up a chunk of all the major releases that come out in a year. And we're just saying, Netflix, here you go. That's yours now. I know you don't make movies, or when you do make movies, you don't make very good ones, but here you go. 13 releases a year. That's yours now.
Movie theaters are already struggling so much. Like, you know, I know the movie theaters get a bad rap because, like, the snacks and stuff are so expensive. Here's something a lot of people don't know about that, is that movie theaters get very little cuts of the ticket sales.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's quite low. Maybe it's 10%, and so they actually have to basically mark up the snacks. I'm not justifying it. I get it. Like, a, you know, $10, $12 small popcorn is not a good deal. But, A, you can sneak food in or something.
They pay a lot of money just for the rights to those movies. And then they have, you know, ticket sales are split between many different entities.
Yeah, and so, like, basically, if Netflix owns Warner Brothers, who's releasing a lot of the movies that, you know, are keeping theaters alive, sure, like right now they can tell you like, oh, well, we won't change anything. We won't change the way it's done. We'll still, you know, support their projects. But like, will they, first of all? And then like, what happens when theaters are gone? And it's like, well, you got to have a Netflix account to watch this thing on streaming. I mean, you know how much Netflix costs? It goes up like $2 like every 6 months.
Yep.
So, I mean, soon it'll be like $30 to have a Netflix subscription, and that's the only way, like, you lose access to, like, the family or friend experience that is going to the theater with your friends, so.
Well, now you can invite your family over to Netflix and chill. Ugh. You know, the part that actually annoys me the most about this potential acquisition is the sickening notion that Warner Brothers, a studio that's existed since the 1920s, that's longer than any of us have been alive. And if you were alive, how are you watching this podcast? But that's all besides the point. It's been around since the 1920s. They've given us so many cultural points along the way, you kind of can't count them all. And in 2025, what started as little more than a movie rental service is buying the entirety, I mean, not the entirety, I think there was like a split between that and like Discovery Media, but they're buying the entirety of Warner Brothers since 1923. It's Netflix. A bunch of nerds in a room became billionaires in the last 15 years, and now they're buying all of Warner Brothers.
Because once like Warner Brothers is gone, the only other major player left, I feel like, is like Sony and like Disney. I mean,
Disney's still around. Sony's still around.
The CEO cast doubt on the role of movie theaters going forward, because sounds like he's not a big fan of them and doesn't think they're very useful. Though the streaming giant will need to premiere some films in theaters to be considered for certain awards, Sarandos doesn't see the theater experience as something accessible for most folks. He says, if you're fortunate enough to live in Manhattan and you can walk to a multiplex and see a movie, that's fantastic. Most of the country cannot. it's a bit of an odd statement considering that cars exist.
I would guess that most people who watch movies don't walk to the theater to watch them.
Yes, still, Sarando sees the industry's reliance on theaters as an arbitrary limitation that he's happy to dispense with. Much to the displeasure of Hollywood's Christopher Nolan, actually. I saw that the Directors Guild of America, led by Christopher Nolan, plans to meet with Netflix to address major concerns regarding the streamer's acquisition of Warner Brothers. So, also, James Cameron, not a fan, apparently. I mean, I think, like, I just... It's interesting. I don't have anything personally against Netflix, I guess. Whatever. Like, it's a corporation. But I don't like the idea of us losing movie theaters. Like, I know there are people who say, like, you know, theaters suck, or, like, you know, I went to a theater once and it was loud or whatever. But, like, if it's one of those things where you won't realize until they're gone that it's great, say goodbye to another third space in the world, like another chance to leave your house and socialize or just to celebrate with friends and family, gone.
I really just, I don't care for, I mean, maybe it's because I'm old and I don't like seeing things change, which plays a very large part in my displeasure here. But in the last, like, 10 years, we lost, what was that, 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
That's gone. Now we're going to lose Warner Brothers. And that's going to leave Universal, Paramount, Disney, and, like, Sony.
Hulu's gone because Hulu was bought by Disney.
Well, Hulu was always a joint venture between multiple companies. Okay. Disney was always invested in Hulu, but they just decided, well, we want the whole thing now.
Okay.
So in a weird way, that's hasn't really changed. I think
that Netflix would also be getting HBO, right?
Yeah, because Warner Brothers owns HBO and HBO Max. It's a huge play by Netflix, and I've never wanted anything from the FTC before, but I really want them to stop this one.
I just think, like, if Netflix owns this much stuff, they're going to increase prices, and it's going to be the only place that you can see things. You'll have to deal with whatever it is that Netflix kind of asks of you, whether that's, you know, limiting the housing system with, like, your Netflix account. Like, you're not in your local house. Like, you're at a friend's house, and you can't watch things. They need to have, like, an account too, and, you know.
I mean, it'll increase the amount of lost media out there, because
yep.
Even if Netflix buys everything on HBO Max and integrates HBO Max into the Netflix catalog, they're not going to host everything that was on HBO Max. So some things will just kind of disappear, unless you sail the high seas, you know.
Yeah, and Netflix is known for taking shit off. Like, so there's just things on Netflix that just disappear, and, like, they give zero explanation. They also cancel shows after, like, one season.
Now, Warner Brothers is no like saint when it comes to those very things.
By no means.
But it's still, at least in my opinion, it's still better to have two different companies making, like, kind of screwing up the movie industry than one mega company.
Well, speaking of companies that have not-so-fun practices for consumers, let's talk a little bit about Crunchyroll, eh?
Oh, God.
So Crunchyroll is a company that I've really kind of, you know, I use it. I watch my anime on Crunchyroll. So full disclosure there, I guess. Crunchyroll halts ad-supported streaming on December 31st.
Crunchyroll revealed in an advertisement during its own free streams that it's halting free ad-supported streaming on its service on December 31st. An ad popped up. The company's subscription tiers and other ad-supported streaming channels are unaffected. It says only certain titles were available for ad-supported streaming without subscription. And that was, well, many, and I'm not going to get into all of that. But ad-supported streaming will end this year.
Yeah. So you have to have a Crunchyroll subscription. This is one of these things where, like, it was only a matter of time, and I guess some would argue that, like, well, you know, they don't have any obligation to have an ad-supported tier or whatever. But, like, just looking at the list of anime that are on their, like, ad-supported tier that you could watch for free, a lot of this is, like, very, like, good entry-level anime. I'm seeing, you know, My Hero Academia, My Dress Up Darling, Spy Family, Cowboy Bebop, Demon Slayer, Blue Lock, and just a lot of things. Like, there's a lot of these anime that I've watched, and, like, I'm a paying Crunchyroll subscriber. Actually, wait, you're a paying Crunchyroll subscriber.
I was about to say, don't you dare. I'm a paying
other services.
What? The point Which is, one?
Prime Video.
I also have a Prime.
Oh, well, that's... I mean, anyway, the point is, this is like a lot of people's like first exposure to anime. Like there are a lot of people who like might not be watching anime if they weren't watching on the ad supported tier. So like that kind of sucks. Like I feel like that's kind of gatekeeping anime. Well,
they're just gonna go back to piracy. Anybody who was watching their anime for free on Crunchyroll was likely only doing it to avoid pirating for a while.
Well, actually, I'm not even so sure. Like I think there are people like us who, you know, we kind of are more, we know about that option, but like I think like I have some friends who are like they just watch ad-supported like Crunchyroll and they don't pirate because they're like scared to or they think it's like, oh, if I pirate, I'll get a virus. I'm like, you know, whatever.
Oh, they must not have been like forged in the fires of this shit because
Frostwire, like, LimeWire kids.
I at least at one point, the only way to watch anime outside of Toonami was to pirate it. So like for a lot of people, they, you know, they never abandoned the pirate life. Crunchyroll and High Dive and all of them exist, and they're like, why would I start paying for something I watch for free?
Yeah, so this just sucks. It's another one of these Crunchyroll things. I mean, that's not even like the worst thing I've heard about Crunchyroll in the last month. There's also the whole like AI subbing.
The AI subbing debacle.
That's not great.
The their like little partnership with High Dive, which
there's a partnership with High Dive? I didn't know
there's
that.
Like, yeah, there's like this thing with High Dive where they will kind of I think it's them and other networks where they'll kind of share content. But I remember Crunchyroll had a similar deal with Funimation before Funimation ended up being purchased by Sony and joining Crunchyroll. And then increasing the amount of lost anime in the world.
Yeah, mergers are scary.
Like, I wish I had a lot of good to say about Crunchyroll because I've been a subscriber for so long.
It's that I don't have much good to say.
I've had a Crunchyroll for so long, I can definitely tell you, it's a service that's just been slowly getting worse.
Yeah.
Like, just ever so slightly, every few months or so, a feature disappears, or a feature gets changed, and it's in a very clearly, like, worse way. I remember when we were able to leave comments underneath episodes of anime, but they have completely removed that feature.
I've always felt that Crunchyroll does just the bare fucking minimum. Like, their player sucks. That is not, like, the app usually is barely functional, at least in my experience. It's kind of one of those things where, like, it has the anime on there, and it is subbed, and that's, like, all you get. Like you said, there's no convenience features. It feels very, like, bare bones. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a huge supporter of theirs or anything. So, them getting rid of this ad-supported tier just isn't very... That's not very good news.
I was like, and it's a shame because not long ago I was thinking about, you know, maybe I'll cancel my Crunchyroll. Now I know if I cancel it, I'll have a very difficult time legally watching anime.
Yeah. Okay. So here's a quick AI one. This is about creator backlash around the AI moderation that YouTube has been integrating. So, I don't know if you knew about this, because I don't think it's really affected us or anything, but YouTube has been integrating AI moderation. And so YouTube CEO Neil Mohan says the platform is pushing ahead with expanded AI moderation tools, even as creators continue to report wrongful bans and mass takedowns tied to these automated systems. So... I don't know exactly what all the AI moderation is supposed to be used for. I guess they say it's key in policing misinformation, IP theft, scams, and also what many creators have dubbed AI slop. So he says that AI will make our ability to detect and enforce violative content better, more precise, and able to cope with scale, adding that the system improves literally every week. The thing is, though, I've seen a lot of creators who have gotten their accounts banned, like second channels getting banned because they use clips from like your main channel or whatever, now it detects that like it's stealing content or whatever. And then when you try to appeal it, you can't get in contact with a human for support.
I do remember earlier in our YouTube career, learning that YouTube didn't have a plan for when creators started making multiple YouTube channels.
Yeah.
They operated under the assumption that there would be one creator and that one creator would have one channel. They didn't even really have a plan for if a team of creators had one channel. But when a famous or popular YouTuber made a second channel, they actually didn't know what to do with or about that, because in a sense it kind of violates the YouTube like terms of service. Because, like, for instance, when you get banned from YouTube, you're actually not even supposed to make another YouTube account.
Right.
They're not banning the account. They're banning you. So it's weird then that I can make 3 and 4 YouTube accounts. I can upload content on all of them and then, you know, and get paid for all of those. And for YouTube's head still spinning, trying to figure out how do you rectify that? Because a lot, it shouldn't be a thing that I upload content from my other channel in reference to something on a different channel. Then yeah. I get a copyright strike or I get a ban for stealing content. It's like, how am I stealing content from myself? How are you even enforcing something that no one complained about? Because
yeah.
At one point on YouTube, these bans and things were complaint-driven, and they had to be reviewed by human beings, where even though we had the multi-channel situation happening, a human could easily see, oh, this is Team APS 2. And
yes, APS Amplifier or whatever.
After APS a series clips. Of emails confirming that this account very much is owned by the same person, they would be like, okay, you're good. But the AI doesn't know that, and they haven't seemed to bother training the AI to recognize it.
And it's also at a time when, like, you know, we've seen the rise of second channels and, like, clips channels. Like, I wanted to make a Pot of Greed clips channel. I still kind of do, where it's just like, okay, these are just, like, each story that we talk about is like a clip, and so that way, you know, individually those videos can reach more bespoke audiences. And, you know, obviously it's a way to sort of further monetize the content that we make here. Because, like, we sit here for 2 hours and we talk and, you know, the podcast gets a certain amount of views. But if I can get more views by kind of letting you only hear the Netflix story or only hear the Crunchyroll story, you know, that'd be really cool. But then I guess, like, AI moderation might look at that and be like, oh, like, this is just a account copying, you know, this content. And I could prove to a human, well, no, it's not. I mean, I just own both channels. But no, it's the AI doesn't have, like, a vehicle for you to talk to it in that way.
Every few weeks you hear about another person having the same exact problem happen. Heck, I mean, reaction content has been a big part of YouTube for years now. It's not going anywhere. I wish it would stop, but it won't. And I found it very interesting that if you're a large reaction channel, your content's okay, and you will, for the most part, be protected by YouTube. But if you want to react and as a smaller YouTube channel, you're kind of rolling the dice on whether or not you'll catch a ban.
Mm-hmm.
Your content isn't that much different from these multi-million subscriber reaction channels. You're just smaller, and so YouTube doesn't actually care to pay attention or anything.
Yeah, you have no means of support. Like, you don't have a contact at YouTube or of any kind, and it's really unfortunate.
I'll just call up my buddy over at YouTube and get this cleared up. Not everybody can say that.
Yeah, so.
I just realized we kind of could say that, couldn't we?
Well, yeah, no, we've had, like, a YouTube Connect, but the thing is, not everybody has that.
It does not go as far as to head of YouTube. We're not
We're not getting at something like that, so. Interesting story. Anything else?
I have an interesting one.
Sounds like it's more bad news.
No, this one's not bad. Okay. Well, it depends. How much do you like coffee?
I'm not a coffee guy.
Well, you'll hate this pizza then. Pizza Hut is back with another chaotic food crossover, and this time it's pizza
this disgusting.
Meets coffee.
This just made me sick.
The chain has officially launched a coffee-infused pizza called the Co-Pizza. And yes, it's a real menu item. The Co-Pizza is available exclusively in Brunei. Where is Brunei?
A small nation
on the island of Borneo. I love that they included that here because I had no
clue. Some context helps.
Kopi means coffee in Malay, and Pizza Hut leaned all the way in on this confusing combo, blending the chain's usual cheesy flavor with the aroma of brewed coffee.
Oh, so there's, like, cheese and coffee in it?
Yes. Ew. What started as a 2-week limited run has now been extended thanks to overwhelming demand for the strange pie. Pizza Hut admitted the mashup is confusing at first, but promised that one bite is enough to understand why everyone's talking about it.
You know, as nasty as this looks, I was hoping that it would be something that's, like, in America. Maybe it will be one day, because I would want to try it.
If I feel like they're going to do, like, limited rollouts of it to see if this can be a thing in other places. I highly, highly doubt it will be a widespread like a permanent menu item, just because that will require them stocking ingredients they don't normally keep.
I mean, what do you think of it? Would you try this out just based on this picture?
Most and what things you know of coffee, I will try once.
Okay.
So I am very much willing to try the coffee, the Co-Pizza, but
yeah. Looks gross.
It probably won't taste very good, but I could. Wait, I might be surprised. Yeah,
I can't imagine.
It can't taste as bad as like pineapple on pizza. It can't taste that bad.
Which, you know, for what it's worth, I do have these Grinch socks on. So I mean, I did get the Grinch meal. I had the pickle fry or yeah, the pickle flavored.
How
fries.
Was that?
Well, you would have known if you'd used the
pickle. Just to know, guys, sauce. I absolutely refuse to use the dill pickle stuff. I am not a pickle fan.
I thought it was really good, but I am a dill pickle flavor kind of liker. So. I thought it was good. I mean, like, this seems like this is a bit more of a challenge because, like, this is, like, not sort of just, like, a... Because, like, it was still, at the end of the day, it was just, like, a french fry with some powder on it. But, like, it fundamentally, it's a french fry.
This is a pizza here with some coffee in it.
Here, like, they're, like, looks like... What are these... What are these mounds? Like, are they, like, pepperonis with, like...
I don't think so.
This is puddles of coffee, like, turned into... Like, what is that?
I don't know. And now I really need somebody from Brunei to go ahead and freeze one of them bad boys and send it over because I need to know.
If they bring it to the United States, I will give it a shot. I tried the nasty Arby's like steak nuggets. They weren't very good. But.
And the thing is, those shouldn't be as nasty as they were. Like,
yeah, they weren't great.
The texture was not great. Customer service was worse. The flavor was bland.
Just reminded why I don't go to Arby's. That's all.
It's the reason why their lines are always empty.
Well, I guess it's time for us to do a little bit of pot, huh?
Let's do it.
Okay, so we have some viewer-submitted questions to talk about today.
I'm so excited.
These are fun Yu-Gi-Oh! Related ones. These are from the form down below in the description, although next week's questions will probably be from the YouTube community. Remember, you guys can also submit them there, so either place works.
I had an idea, Paul.
Oh?
You know, we're going to a convention.
We are.
This coming weekend.
And oh, I forgot
Anime
to mention
Frontier
that
in Texas, just to let you guys know.
Come say hi if you're there.
What if we took viewer questions from people we met at the convention?
I'm not opposed to such a thing.
I think it'll be fun. It could be interesting.
I would like to do a video like that. We go to like the card game room or just anywhere that we recognize people.
And we can pull out the camera, let them ask their question, and we'll answer it in pod.
How big is your... No,
my deck.
Yeah, I'm currently running 40 cards, but some days it's 60.
Unless it's a Bandai card game, of which it's always 50.
Hey guys, Kirby here. I wanted to present a hypothetical. So imagine a monster card that had full immunity to effects, 3,000 attack, and level 4, so it could be normal summoned. Would this card see play? Your normal summon for a 3,000 attack beater that can't be removed except by being destroyed by battle or tributed. It has no archetypal value. If it wouldn't see play, would adding tribute immunity push it over the edge? What about even higher attack? This is that age-old question of, like, how far can you push a vanilla, basically? Mm-hmm. Although, at least in this case, it is an effect monster. But it's like, you know,
effect is that it can't be affected by effects.
How valuable can you make a standalone card in Yu-Gi-Oh! That is a monster? What do you think?
Not that valuable, honestly. The fact of the matter is, unless it also says it can't be destroyed by battle, a modern deck will find a way around a 3,000 point stat line.
Yeah.
Like, yet it can't pop it or anything, but 3,000 is actually a fairly common stat line. So even if you don't have anything bigger than 3,000, you likely can crash something into it. Now, if it's a 3,000 defense and it's a defense position, that can cause an extra.
Although,
issue.
I guess if it's a level 4, you'd have to normal summon it. So it'd have to be an attack.
That's true. It would have to be an attack position for a turn. Or you could probably just set it in that situation.
Or there'd be like some way to special summon it. If it'd have to have that clause of not being able to be special summoned. And then at that point, you start to actually like realize that maybe even that wouldn't be all that good. Because which would you rather do? Normal summon this one monster that basically says, out me? Or normal summon like your deck's archetypal starter that builds a whole board?
Because the idea is when your board initially gets broken, one, you don't want to lose immediately. So you want to have enough behind that card to protect yourself. But two, you want to have cards in hand to protect yourself. And it's usually you know, a big part of Yu-Gi-Oh! Is you play a lot of cards on one turn, and a lot, and those cards are supposed to get you more cards for your next turn. If you're using your normal summon on a monster that just exists to, well, out, be outed, then you are, you've sacrificed one avenue to get more cards for your follow-up plays. So it puts you in kind of a precarious position.
And it wouldn't even be like a guaranteed win. Like, it would be like, okay, you summon this, and you'll still have to, like, attack over the course of a few turns. Now, I guess you can do other things alongside it, right? Like, you know, there's engines that don't take a normal summon, Fiendsmith or something. But at that point, I still do wonder if this card, how much work this card's really putting in. Like, it's not contributing much to your strategy. It's just an additional monster that kind of will need to be outed, but doesn't actually pose a distinct threat to the opponent either, outside of, I guess, just being strong.
Now, if we rewind about 7 years, I think you can make a better argument for a card like that, just because the power level of Yu-Gi-Oh! Was a little bit lower, and I felt we were playing more in the battle phase 7 years ago versus now.
Right.
Like a card, like we do so much in the main phases now, even in the standby phases now, that and the draw phase now.
Yeah, like so many, the game is so dynamic. It's like interesting that a monster that just doesn't do anything just doesn't have much of a place. Because like so many, like it's crazy. I've been playing Master Duel. What's new? I've been playing Master Duel, and like every single month, like, as these new decks and archetypes come out, I just realize like every single phase and open game state is so critical. Like, just there's something always happening in the draw. Like, people are activating their quick play spell that searches from deck in the draw phase. They can't be drolled. And they activate this thing in the standby phase, and then this thing in the standby phase, and then this in the main phase. It's like, there's so many quick effects. And it's like, a monster that just simply doesn't do, it's just there. You summon it, and it just says, hi, I'm kind of big. Out me.
Like, a monster like that doesn't really send a chill down a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player's spine nowadays. What usually actually sends a chill is, like, a level one monster with zero attack and defense.
Now yeah, because that means you're about to do some fuck shit.
You see that, and it's like, you don't even need to read it. That needs to be negated ASAP.
They also added that, you know, would add in tribute immunity, push it over the edge. That would help. Like, if it can't be tributed, then it can't be kaiju'd, but still, it could be swung over. That's not terribly hard today. And, like, still, there's, like, Underworld Goddess.
And a card like that, if you could just surprise your opponent with it and they didn't even know it existed, fine. But if it's an established card that everyone knows about, a card like that, as described, is simply outed by making a change to your extra deck. You can add one card to your extra deck and you're good to go. Just anything that beats over it.
Yeah. So, to answer the question, yeah, I don't actually think that it would make a huge impact. And that says a lot about kind of Yu-Gi-Oh!, but yeah, I just don't think it would.
It'd be tough.
Next question is Macro Master 2015 here. Longtime viewer, first-time writer. My question to you is, should Konami introduce set rotation? And if they did, how do you think that would work? We've had this question like a long time ago.
It always comes back around, kind of like a rotation.
Yeah. I mean, so you think in set rotation, you know, is that the answer to our sort of set of vaguely defined woes that we all have?
I don't know if it fixes things. It would be at least interesting to see Yu-Gi-Oh! With a rotation. Just kind of moving old cards out of the format on a very regular basis.
Gasp, it almost sounds like that's kind of what we have.
Well, we do and don't, right?
Yeah.
We have new cards that come in and they power creep a lot of the old new cards, but then we have these very old cards that exist just to be exploited. These open-ended random cards that do absolutely nothing until a new card comes out and it says, oh yeah, I'm busted now.
I think that a lot of the core appeal of Yu-Gi-Oh! For many people and the more like mid-core to casual end especially, but even competitive end, is the idea that you can kind of like combine new cards with old cards. Like that's kind of the sales pitch, is like, your collection means something. A card that was useless before might actually suddenly gain a new application or appeal. And so that's sort of the fun of it, is that like any card could tomorrow be the big thing.
And now that we make so much like legacy support for older strategies.
Yeah, that'd be
out the door too. Will just force you to run those old bad cards in your deck.
So if you have like an actual rotation thing where it's like, okay, the last 2 years of stuff is legal and then maybe whatever cards got reprinted. So they could reprint a few staples or whatever.
Yeah.
There'd be some benefits. Like, I think that there are certain cards in Yu-Gi-Oh! That walk this fine line between not really being bannable as it seems, but like still being troubling, like there's hanger-ons. I think of like Droll and Lockbird kind of feels like it comes to mind, or like, you know, just certain old hand traps, old floodgates, like you can ban them, but some of them aren't even like, they don't even feel like they need to be banned. They're just like, it's a little annoying. And so like, I guess set rotation can allow you to just filter that stuff out.
Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Yu-Gi-Oh! With a set rotation, like I said before, but I do think most, like a lot of modern card games, they release in a way where rotation could be implemented almost at a moment's notice. I noticed like Bandai likes to do that with a lot of their cards. They will usually have a number or a symbol on their cards that dictate like a wave, like a release wave, but then they'll never talk about it and they'll keep updating it over time.
So it's like they're like planning to, because they did that with One Piece, didn't they?
They keep the option open because recently in like the Digimon card game, we finally started using those symbols for our limited tournaments where we have these small series of tournaments where they'll suddenly limit the card pool for those tournaments.
Yeah, it's called regulation with that battle number.
Yeah, exactly.
Or label.
And the thing is, those symbols have existed on the cards for years and they haven't mattered until very recently, but they did not announce a rotation. And I think they put those on the cards so that at some point they could do a rotation if they choose, but they don't seem to be interested in that.
I think
Yu-Gi-Oh! Does not have that.
It'd be good for Yu-Gi-Oh! To like have that, like to keep it in the back pocket, you know, like start kind of like, this is just a wave 9 cards, right? Like, because you can almost, if you squint, kind of see the game that way. Like, back when there was, like, a new anime series airing, and, like, they'd always do sets in... Do you remember the Pack Rainbow?
How could I forget?
Yeah, where...
We made so many videos on the Pack Rainbow. Yeah, we made,
like, shorts and stuff. But for those of you guys who don't know, it's basically, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Packs always follow the same pattern of, like, pack colors that change. Like, there's always, like, a yellow set followed by a whatever color, you know. And you can look this up on, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Wiki. It'll give you more information. But, I mean, I kind of feel like those are basically eras of Yu-Gi-Oh! There was a time when those were only, like, 8 sets, and they increased it to, like, 12, and then now they're technically back to 8 again. But either way, I feel like those indirectly sort of seem like what you're describing that One Piece and Digimon did, where it's like, okay, anything in the Duelist Alliance era, let's say, or the Duelist... Return of the Duelist era. That's like, that'd be from Return of the Duelist to Cyber... Storm Access, right? And that's before, you know, we got the next Green Duelist set. Like, anything in that era would kind of be considered to be, like, of the same design principles, of the same power level, intended kind of play philosophy. That'd be cool. I wish that they had added some sort of a label to those, where they could be easily identified. Because, like, anytime that you do rotation, you do have to start having some easy identifier on the cards.
Right.
Not just for, like, judges and tournaments, but also just kind of for locals where people aren't as... obsessed and like know like every single, you know, because like average Joe just might not know his card got like rotated out last month and he's mad because you're telling him he can't play his deck, you know.
I mean, that's always a factor in like the Pokemon TCG, where I mean it's such a huge card game and people have cards from all eras of like the Pokemon TCG, but and they a lot of times they forget, if they're not playing competitively, there is a rotation. Cards like a lot of your older cards are not currently played, but some are. And if you are not already bathed in the waters of rotation, it can be a bit confusing.
Yeah, and like, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh's got so much other stuff to be getting on with that I don't even know if like a rotation would be... Like, maybe it helps. I don't know.
I do think... I would like to see, because now I'm thinking about it, I actually would like to see Yu-Gi-Oh use some of Bandai's limited tournament series, where they just impose a almost random deck restriction on the players, and they say, all right, for this weekend and for this specific like prize card, everyone has to build a deck and the level of monsters can't be higher than level 3.
That would be interesting. I do think that like just kind of giving effectively like festivals in Master Duel, yeah, right? Like where you just kind of are setting some deck building limits. I know most people's minds go to like the festivals, like there's the Fusion X Link Festival or whatever. And those are good starting points, just a certain extra deck type. But I think that I like where you're going with it, where you can do some really specific things. Like, okay, like level 3 or lower monsters only, or, you know, like You could get wonky if you really want
to. It's only for a weekend. You don't have to get bent out of shape. You know, like, I don't want to build something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Almost don't even give it enough time. Well, don't give it enough time for people to even, like, be that angry or develop, like, a whole meta around it. It would almost be fun. I know that you can't do this at the YCS level because people pay so much to go and they'd be upset. But, like, it'd be interesting if, like, at the local level, you just tell people, okay, at OTS stores today, we're doing a level 3 festival. And you find out the week of. And you're not supposed to be able to have time. Like, that's part of the sales pitch, is that, like, yeah, suddenly you have to kind of make a deck under these guidelines. I mean, you'll have a week to build it, but that's it. And if you can't play in it, like, whatever, I guess it's just 1 week of locals. But, like, that could be fun.
It's kind of like those cooking reality shows where, like Iron Chef and stuff, where they, you know, every week there's a new challenge and everyone competes to make their best recipe within the constraints that they're given.
Yeah.
It could be interesting. Just shake things up a little bit.
So, yeah, those are the questions. And that brings us to the end of this week's Pod of Greed, the only podcast
on the internet.
If you guys don't mind, though, we would appreciate it if you could leave a review, a thumbs up on the video, all of that stuff. I actually was checking, and I want to, before the end of the year, go through our podcast analytics and see, like, what countries or states or whatever kind of listen to the podcast the most, what the demographics are. I feel like it'd be kind of fun.
Oh, we're going
to
do it in pod? That's
fun. Yeah, we'll do it in pod. Like, I can pull up that's all that cool stuff.
I like that.
So if you haven't already, definitely, like, if you listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever, be sure to rate us 5 stars, leave us a review. Yeah.
And let us know if we were in your Spotify Wrap.
That would be cool, too. I did see we were in someone's. Someone did, yeah, we're in someone's Spotify Wrap. I think they tagged us on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, tag us in it, and Paul will send you one of his socks.
Yeah. They are green, like the Pot of Greed. All right. I don't know why I had to add that. Well, that's going to be it for this week's pod. Hope you all enjoyed it. Again, reminder, we'll be at Anime Frontier this weekend. So if you see any of us, make sure that you come up and say hi. I'll have some Yu-Gi-Oh cards as well. So maybe if you catch me at the right time, I can duel, but no promises. That's going to be it.
We'll see you guys in the next one.
Pass turn.
Pass turn.